Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. I'm ready for story time.
Oh, I love that.
You know, it's a rainy day here right now as we're recording. And like coffee's in hand, and it's just like you sink into the couch and you know you're in for a good story.
Oh, good. Yeah. I hope I can deliver.
Well, when have you not?
Well,
we got 424 shows before this.
Okay.
Of evidence. And I think maybe four of those have been mine.
Okay. Well, I will do my best. Here goes.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. This is about a client, and I'm going to name her Margot.
Okay. Because of Margot Robbie and you're inspired?
Yes.
Yeah, we're in our Barbie era.
Totally. Loved the Barbie movie. So her name is Margot, and I will say made up name, just in case somebody didn't hear that the first time. There is always confidentiality in telling stories. So Margot says to me at the very beginning of her session, which was over Zoom, she said, you know, I think I'd like to just hear from the spirit world. I think that's called open. She says, I just want to know whatever they want me to know about my life that could help me. Is that something that you can do? And I said, I will give it my best shot. So I asked the spirit guides what they'd like to present to her today.
Can I present something?
Yeah.
I'll give it my best shot is laughable because I've never once heard you come out of a session and be like, man, this client asked for open just to speak to the guides and nothing happened.
No, that's a good point.
I'll do my best is laughable, Karen.
That's true. They have never...
You have always shown up tenfold for the guides to be the channel. And the guides have always shown up tenfold for you and the client to do their job.
And I thank the guides all the time, daily, for showing up.
Okay. So do your best.
Okay. Here it is. So the guide said to me, well, we need to show you things. We need you to be really immersed.
Because you've never not.
Okay. And I told Margot that I needed quiet time. I needed to be able to download and to participate and then to share everything with her. So once that was achieved, and I don't know quite how to explain that to people, but I'll say being present.
Okay. Do you want this explained to clients?
Well, you can. Go ahead and I'll stick to the story part.
I mean, it's basically as though, you know, two of us are in a room and you've got noise-canceling headphones on and I'm listening to the auditory being pumped into the room and I have to say to you, you know, I'm holding up a finger to mean just a moment, Karen. I'm going to listen and when this auditory play is done, then I'm going to remove your headphones and I'm going to I'm going to present to you what I just heard.
Mm-hmm. That's a great analogy. And I would say that there's also seeing things.
Yeah, for sure. So the other senses are incorporated, but I just mean when you're waiting for a download, that's what I'm trying to explain.
Wonderful.
That's why we need a pause.
Thank you. So I did that. And then I said to Margot, the guides are wanting to share an experience that you have, that they see that you have repeatedly in life. They want to explain what it's doing to you and the process that you're going through that's creating behaviors and patterns. And they want to talk to you about how that's related back to your family and your childhood. And then they want to take it into the future and tell you what you're going to do with it.
Mm.
And she just went, okay, I really don't know what you're doing, but I'm just going to trust it and go, sure. And I'm just going to listen. And I said, you're going to listen and you're going to participate because you have to use your own memory to pull up those files to be able to say, yes, I did that. Or I do that when. Most recently, and this is how I feel. You have to access a whole bunch of stuff. I said, so you have to be very engaged. And she said, okay, I'll do that. And you go ahead and you tell me what the guys are showing you and explaining. So I said, well, I see you going to an event. And I said, it could be just a dinner, hanging out with a friend. It can be everyday situations where you're going to see, and I'll give you the example currently, friends. And I said, so you go to an activity, so say it's a dinner, and you just chat. So they just show me just regular activities where you're just going and chatting with friends, you're hanging out, whatever it is. And I said, and then you get into the car, so you're leaving, you go and you leave, you get into the car, you start to drive away, and I hear your thoughts. And she goes, okay, what thoughts? And I said, well, you start going into self-criticism. And she goes, oh. And you can feel her like, oh. You know, this, oh, shit. She goes, do you know what I'm thinking? And I said, yes. I said, you go into self-criticism about the things that you said when you were with your friends. You start playing over like a movie, something somebody said to you, and your response to it, and you start second-guessing your response.
It's post-mortem.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. So I didn't know that. So thank you for saying that for everybody else that's listening today. And I said, you play it over, but it's a constant criticism of what you should have said differently. You wonder if what they said to you was the truth. You wonder if they said something in such a way that I'll say is that once you get in the car, you wonder if they're now going to share with everybody what they really wanted to say with you or to you, pardon me. And so you're expecting that there's going to be double speak.
Okay, so you're mentioning a few things. So not just self-criticism.
Yes.
But the anxiety of almost like a vulnerability.
Yes.
Of I overshared.
Yes.
Right? So there's a couple of things happening here. And I'm clarifying that because not all of this is a post-mortem. So when you ruminate on what you said and what you should have said or could have said or should have done better, right? Postmortem comes from a medical community where they look at, okay, this person died. What went wrong? Where should we have done something different, right? So that is the criticism or critique of what could I have done differently to make this go better in my favor or in a favorable outcome. And you're adding on top of that the, okay, I shared and now I have vulnerability that they're going to do something with it to harm me where I'm feeling unsafe or insecure about what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you. So I explained this, all of this to her, and I said, you do this in the car on the way home. I said, you do it when you get home. I said, you do it for days afterwards. And I said, your emotions get dysregulated about it. I said, you will even do things like call them or call somebody or text them right away. Even in the car, you'll pull over and go, oh, and you'll check in about what you've said. You will ask them if they were okay with it. You try to curb anything that happened back there or could still be happening once you've left the event. You even do it the next day or even a week later. You make a mental note that the next time you're with them, you will go back and say, hey, did, and you call it checking in. And you try to check in to make sure that these people are all okay with you currently. And she goes, yep. And she goes, I feel really
exposed.
Yep. And she goes, I feel really uncomfortable. And the guide said to me, she feels shame.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I forgot this was Coffee with the Sarlows. I thought we were doing book club for a minute, and I started going into the Enneagram.
I figured.
Yeah. And my brain is doing process of elimination of which personality types this is.
I figured this.
Go on. I love story time.
I knew you were going to be doing that.
We have a 2 or a 4 on our hands.
I'm totally aware. So She goes into this pattern, and the guide said, it is uncomfortable. There's no doubt. So we're not denying you're uncomfortable, but we want to identify it on the emotional wheel that what you're in is shame. Mm-hmm. And that what you're trying to do is in some way you think you're trying to problem solve so you can come out of the shame. You're looking for a way out of it. But what you're doing is that you're the one that's building it. You're the one that's creating it. Mm-hmm. You're the one that is responsible for all of the feelings of shame here.
Which will likely bring on more shame.
Yes. And I said, so I have to be careful of the way that I speak to you because you sit in all of that shame, even as I'm describing it to you. And she goes, oh my God. She goes, I do. She goes, I am. She goes, I'm even feeling shame that you're bringing this up to me right now. She says, because like you said, Kelly, she said, yeah, I don't remember that she said, I feel exposed. I think she said things like, I feel embarrassed, like all these shame kind of words. So we had a little conversation right there about the fact that this is shame that's created by her. And she went, oh, I don't feel like that's fair.
Right.
She goes, I don't feel like that's right. And the guide said, it's okay. It's okay that she feels that way. Tell her it's okay. Just say we want to go back to her childhood now. And just ask her to hit the pause button for a second. We'd like to go back and explain something. So then I explained that to Margo and she goes, okay, fine. I can sit here and I'll listen to it. She says, I feel shitty. And I said, I'm sorry that you feel that way. May I continue? I'm asking for permission. And she went, yeah.
Just for anyone who caught that, that wasn't an apology. That was a statement of empathy. Because for some of you, you will be activated by that statement where someone in your life who gaslights you presents what is supposed to be an apology and says, I'm sorry you feel that way, meaning I'm not going to take any responsibility for that. In this situation, it's not Karen's responsibility, nor is it the guide's responsibility to take responsibility, pardon me, Enneagram 1 here, for how this individual feels. You're saying, I empathize with what you're going through, and may I stay in this moment with you?
Yes.
It's beautiful. And there's a really big difference between a fake apology and a beautiful statement of empathy.
Thank you. So then I told her I needed another couple of minutes because the guides wanted to give me information about her childhood and I needed to access all that information again. And she said, yes. I went through that process with the guides, took another couple of minutes and then said to her, I said, what the guides have showed me is that you're a child. And I said, I got to see right from childhood number one, that you come from a massive family. And she goes, I do. And I said, it doesn't matter where you are in the family. I'm not going to go about that. I'm not going to try and prove there's brothers and sisters. I'm not going to go through that stuff. That's not what's important. I said, what happens there is important. And what I saw is that you have a dad that's really vacant. He's just not around for a number of reasons. And she goes, correct. And I said, your mom is the key figure in the family. And she goes, yeah. And so what your mom does is, first of all, she feels that she's all by herself. So she leans on and confides in children, things that she really should be saying to her husband or to a friend or to a therapist, but not to any of the children. And she goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, she will go up to one child and try to make them feel special and say things to them like, well, confidentially speaking, you can't tell your other brothers and sisters this, but this brother and sister is going through this. I think they should do this. I'm going to tell them that. And so she carries out these conversations with all of the kids about all of the other children. And what it does to every single one of the kids is it makes them feel special that mom's telling me this and treating me like I'm an adult. And they think, wow, she trusts me with these secrets.
Yeah, it's privileged information.
Yes. But she does it to every single one of them. And eventually, over time, so, you know, the guides are showing that over decades of doing this, that the children amongst themselves do the very same thing. So they model mom and they will go up to one person and say, or, you know, two or three siblings, I don't know if you know about this, but another sibling, so-and-so, is, you know, going through such and such a situation. So I don't want you guys to repeat this to anybody else in the family. And I don't want you to confront her about it. No, you can't go and tell her that because we're not supposed to know about it. And so I said to Margo, you didn't ever consider for decades, much like most of your brothers and sisters did not and have not considered that you're all doing this to each other. There's so much cognitive dissonance that you're mom's special one. And you're all trying to maintain this special feeling or special relationship with your mother, that you are all participating in a very toxic behavior, and that every single one of you are doing it. And she went, okay. And I said, what the guides are trying to show here is that you're all pitted against each other from your mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Or pardon me, from your mom in this particular situation, like what she does in this behavior, so that she actually has somebody to confide in. But also eventually she kind of figures out that you guys are all competing amongst each other, and it makes her feel more and more important, more and more special herself. Mm-hmm. And so it builds mom's narcissistic behavior and personality style.
Yeah, and remember too, an individual like mom, it doesn't even have to be that she's actually confiding anything truthful. It can be that she now understands, I have set them up in a way where I can now plant seeds that I want.
Bingo. Thank you.
So now I've got all of these little kids or teenagers or whatever the age range is, absolutely,
seniors,
adult children, who are doing the dirty work for me. That where I don't have to ask for what I actually want or need, I can just plant indirect seeds.
Yes. It's explained to Margot that this type of behavior of what you've described as planting seeds.
Which are ideas, by the way. Just, you know, you're planting ideas and thoughts in people's minds where they can run with it.
Yes. Has been occurring her entire life and for the entire lives of many of her siblings. Mm-hmm. Most of her siblings. And that as a result of that, there is constant states of confusion as to what the truth is, as to what people truly think, if they even think for themselves and by themselves, or if how her siblings think are extensions of mom and her planted thoughts and seeds.
Mm-hmm. It feels like the Truman Show. Right?
Ooh.
Where Margot's in this position. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's an old movie. It's absolutely excellent. I would highly recommend it. It's with Jim Carrey. You find out that nothing is real. Everything is staged.
Yes.
Right? And so just in this parallel where mom has staged all of these different scenarios, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors for these kids, where the kids find out like, oh my God, these aren't my thoughts, these aren't my feelings, these aren't my anything. They've been planted for me to experience, but they're not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
They're not something I've chosen for myself.
Yeah. And then there are all of these relationships between her and her siblings.
That aren't real.
Exactly.
And so reality, well, you're questioning everything because nothing is real.
That's right. So then she, Margot, then goes out to the friend house in that instance.
Right. She was having dinner in the beginning of this story.
Yes. And now she gets into the car and she's driving home, second guessing everything that just happened with her friends, trying to figure out,
are they going to say, well, I wouldn't want to say this to Margot's face, but, you know, we really should be thinking about, or she really needs to. So you'd constantly be predicting that people are going to behave the way mom behaves.
Yes, exactly. And are my friends the same as these as my siblings?
Mm-hmm.
And so do I project my family dynamics into my friend group in this particular instance? And I said all of that to Margot, and she just sat there and looked at me and was like, what is happening?
Hmm.
And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, what is happening? She says, I literally feel like, she goes, how do I put to words?
Can I?
Yes,
I know you haven't done it.
You go.
Some people will be watching. Some people will be listening. And tell me if I'm wrong, please, in all honesty. The shame is lifting at this point because it's no longer about you. It's no longer something you, Margot, have done wrong. Am I correct?
Yes.
Where you can start to see it for what it is, and it's no longer something that you're internalizing.
Yes.
So when she says, what is happening, it's probably something going on in her body on a visceral level where the shame that has been ever present is lighter or no longer there, even if it's just for a split second while she's sitting in the session itself, and the absence of the shame is completely foreign. That...
Yes.
All right. Cool. This is really fun. And I don't know if people know this based on, you know, when they've started listening to the show or if they've been clients or not, but we get the same thing as channelers, right? We mm-hmm. we do the same job. Mm-hmm. We do debrief with confidentiality because that's part of our mental health and longevity in our careers mm-hmm. is to come up and say, can I debrief about a client? And we share, and sometimes this happens where we will end up telling the other person what they did in a session. And that's important for us as intuitives because it validates that we have channeled accurately.
Correct. Lovely.
Cool.
I absolutely love you in this moment.
Thank you. I love you in all moments. Not to one up you, but.
You did though.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so Margot and I are having this moment, and I said to Margot, I feel the shift in you. I feel the shame shift. And she went, oh, what? And I said, I feel what you're feeling. I have mirror touch synesthesia, so I feel your shame shift.
Okay, that's cool. And I'm really glad that you've got all these gifts. And when you are in a genuine relationship with someone, or you have grown up and held on to your empathy. I'm going to put it that way too. You can also feel when things shift.
Beautiful.
You don't have to have these gifts to know when your partner became actually just a little bit more open to a genuine connection. When shame left and you could actually be vulnerable with someone. Right?
Yes.
And we describe it, well, not all of us will describe it the same way, but we can stand in front of someone and say, I see you. Or I feel you, or in this moment, I feel like I understand you and mm-hmm. know you, right? All the forms of validation mm-hmm. that comes with genuine empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Go on.
So then the guide said, okay, we want to be present with her and we want to move forward with her. So we're going to tell her to Jerry Contra the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, I just go, Jerry Contra the shit out of it means that she's going to do the exact opposite of what she would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
So we want her to go out the next time with a friend. We want her to go out and have dinner. And when she goes to get into the car, she's going to become aware that this is what she does.
Mm-hmm. So you have to self-observe your thoughts.
Yes. She's going to have to get into the car and go, okay, I'm leaving my girlfriend's house or whoever, this dinner party. And I am not going to let myself get in this car and start ruminating over what they could be saying about me behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to get in the car and I'm going to think about what I'm doing this evening. I'm going to think about the grocery list that I need to pick up, or I'm going to whatever it is. So she has to plan.
So those tools are called distraction actions.
Okay, thank
just,
you.
Just so people understand that you're actually handing them a tool, right?
Right.
So if you are someone who behaves like Margot does with this rumination, this postmortem, et cetera, the distraction action is consciously choosing, I'm going to make a list, right? So you're diverting your thoughts where they normally would go consciously to something more productive.
Yes.
Now, I'm saying this on purpose too, because I want you to understand that this is not a form of avoidance when you are implementing the tool in a conscientious way.
Right. Yes, because it's healthy.
Yes. Because you're trying to break a pattern.
Correct. So they told her this. They told her the term and they said, this is exactly what you're going to do and this is how you're going to do it. And this is what it's going to do. It's going to rewire the way that your brain has been functioning your entire life. So you're also going to bring some compassion to it. You can bring and put post-it notes in the car and write down Jerry Contra the shit out of this and stick it on your steering wheel.
Stickers for your steering wheel.
Yes. You can put it on the fridge so that when you get home, like wherever it is that you go. So if you always go like I do, I come in the door and I have a bowl right at the front door in the cupboard where I open it and put my keys. So I always know where my keys are. Well, you could stick a little post-it saying, Jared Contra the shit out of this. Or if you have like a routine when you come home and you put your purse a certain spot, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Whatever it is that you do.
I want to note for people too, though, like just because you consciously decide to make a list and do a distraction action doesn't mean your thoughts aren't going to come back to the normal pattern that you've got. This is very much like meditation or yoga, as an example, where you're going to be focusing on breath work or the visualization in those situations. Your thoughts are going to steer back to what your default method is, which is rumination. It's not about judging it when the thoughts come in or come back. It's about just constant kind correction back to where you want to put your thoughts intentionally. And then again, it's just going to be a little back and forth, and you offer yourself grace and compassion to bring yourself back to where you want to be.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelly. They had suggested the yoga because they knew she did yoga. So they just suggested even when she was doing yoga to do that practice that you're talking about, so that it helped her outside of yoga in all the other aspects of her life. Mm-hmm. And she just sat there and went, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely perfect. I can do that during a yoga practice and then watch it build and develop in the rest of my life. And she likes to walk. So they also said to her, each time you go for your walks, make sure that you're not doing the ruminating and that you're not doing that kind of stuff. And that practice on the walks, that you're consciously choosing what you want to think about and check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I'm pausing there because I was really excited to see her response that she had a direction what to do with something like this. Oh, and the other thing too, the guide said to her was to go to therapy. Just to simply sit, make an appointment with somebody, sit down and talk about this behavior, talk about what's happened to her in her life.
I think, yes, but one of the important things too is to be able to talk about the story that's running through your head.
Yeah.
Right? And this is not the type of, there's tons of different types of therapy. Let me start there, right? Mm-hmm. So depending on the type of therapy you get into, they may not ask you what that story is. They may never get to the bottom of or desire to get to what the story is. They might be just focusing on the behavior and breaking those patterns. Mm-hmm. And there's benefit to it, but just dealing with the behavior is never going to change the internal narrative that you've got running about who you are or who you're supposed to be, mm-hmm. right? Especially in a situation where shame is your default method, mm-hmm. you've got a story about something is wrong with me. Something mm-hmm. is unlovable about me, right? The way that mom has planted that seed in all of her children, that's a running narrative that needs to be addressed and rewritten.
Yeah, because, we could talk about the other narratives that would be in that those minds of all of those children, that there's always something wrong with all of the siblings too.
True. Yeah.
Anyway, that might be for another show or for another session someday with her. I don't know. But the way that Margot's session ended was this plan of action to be able to speak to somebody about it. So the way that the session ended with Margot was on such a freaking high note, because she is understanding a behavior that she did with her friends where she was superimposing her family.
So clarity.
Clarity. And then she got to understand, okay, this is what I'm doing in my present. This is now, the guides are giving me something that I can do currently.
Direction.
And they're giving me something that I can do in my future so that I can continue to work on who I am, so that I actually have the friendships and the relationships that I want with others.
Relief.
And an internal dialogue in my own mind as to who I am outside of my mother and my family.
All right, I'm going to add power. This was wonderful. Thank you so much for story time.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, help spread the love with a like, share, or review of the podcast. See you next Saturday with a brand new episode.